Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, March 31st, or 21st, excuse me, Friday, March 21st, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Community, Plastic Lids Make Benches, Memories. Bottle caps collected to recycle into bench in memory of Jack Brinkatter. Mount Zion. Businesses in Mount Zion are rallying around a project to collect enough bottle caps for a memorial bench to honor the memory of Jack Brinkatter. Jack, 10, died January 5th as a result of a sledding accident, and some of his close friends, triplets Jax, Wren, and Sawyer, Stevenson, Tate Geschwine, Hayden Geschwine, Jace Largent, and Patton Sudila, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing anyone's name, Patton Sudila, are heading up the project with the help of the triplets' mom, Taryn Stevenson and Paula Lukenbill, who founded Paula's Retired Recyclers to help schools, churches, and other organizations recycle plastic caps into benches. This idea originated from Paula, Taryn Stevenson said. As I explained the heaviness in our community and in our home, she suggested the idea of having the kids do something positive to honor their friend, and this idea took off. This has helped guide their broken hearts to more of a place of, how can I help? I was very adamant that this was something that was going to be led by the group of kids. I wanted their minds to join together and celebrate their incredible friend. First, my triplets presented the idea in the form of a slideshow to the principal, who approved. We also met with Jack's parents about the idea as well. The youngsters are donating caps from friends and family in all Decatur Jimmy John's locations, Stellar Wellness, the Little Salon, Kids and Fitness in Forsyth, and Mount Zion schools are accepting donations through March 28th. Caps from medicine bottles, hairspray, milk, detergent, deodorant, flip-tops, condiments, mayonnaise, peanut butter, coffee cans, butter tubs, cream cheese, sour cream, and any plastic lid with a number 2 recycling code are accepted. Lids must be clean and dry. In the time that Lukenbill has been involved in collecting plastic lids for benches, she said, she has kept 6,032 pounds of plastic out of landfills, which have been used for 25 benches, one picnic table, and 3 bird baths. The company, Green Tree Plastics of Evansville, Indiana, charges $328 for a 6-foot bench with a back. The legs and supports are black, and the slats are gray unless the recipient wants a custom color, which costs $50 more. And benches are available in 4- and 8-foot lengths as well. The bird baths, which is a new thing for Green Tree, are only available if they have leftover lids after fulfilling an order. It takes 200 pounds of plastic to make a 6-foot bench with a back. Paula's Retired Recyclers are made up mostly of Golden K Kiwanis members who collect the lids from friends, family, and businesses. Linda Durnell said her neighbors leave bags of lids on her porch. Because the lids have to be clean and dry, she's figured out that she can put them in a mesh bag and run them through her washing machine instead of washing them by hand. It's best, Lukenbill said, if people who want to donate lids simply rinse and dry them before putting them in a donation bin. Before retirement, Lukenbill was a counselor with Decatur Public Schools, and students at Harris School created a mural with various colored lids, which also served as a sensory experience for special education students. That mural started her on the path of recycling lids to make something new. Durnell's favorite story about the plastic lid benches is from the Scoville Zoo. Then-director Ken Fry wanted benches without backs, and she was puzzled by that. Why wouldn't you want a back on the bench? She said, adding with a chuckle, he told me the goats get their heads stuck. Goats, of course, love to climb things, and the benches are a favorite perch. Golden K member Dan Seabach was at a CVS pharmacy filling a prescription when he noticed discarded medication bottles lined up on the shelves and ask if he could have the lids for the project. When they said yes, he started making the rounds of Decatur pharmacies and now has a regular supply of discarded lids. Volunteers meet regularly at Scoville's Zoo to sort the lids. Acceptable lids include any with the recycling triangle on them that are marked 2, 4, or 5. Not all plastic is marked, but Lukenbill said over the years she's learned to tell which unmarked ones are recyclable and which are not. Plastic lids marked 1 or 6 are not usable for benches. Lukenbill takes a trailer and loads of lids to Green Tree and brings back the benches, usually doing 2 benches at a time, and the organizations who ordered the benches split the cost for her gas, renting the trailer. She charges nothing for her time, besides the fact that getting a bench made of lids keeps those lids out of landfills. The cost is considerably less than buying one. Plus, they're sturdy and will last for many years, Lukenbill said. Because Golden K's chosen charitable cause is to benefit children, Durnell said the fact that so many of their benches are for schools makes the lids recycling project a good one for the members. Organizations or individuals who want to order a bench can reach Lukenbill at pluke, P-L-U-K-E, at comcast.net. Again, that's pluke at comcast.net. It's up to them whether they want to collect lids or just pay the processing fee for a bench, she said. And there's a photo of a bench here on page A5. It's a memorial bench made out of plastic bottle caps from Paula's retired recyclers, and it sits in front of the Decatur Civic Center on Monday, March 17th. And it's got a plaque. It's in memory of someone, Helen Parker, it looks like. And it's colored red. It's a very attractive bench. And the large photo on the front page shows Dan Seebach and Pat Durnell volunteer with Paula's retired recyclers to sort clean bottle caps at the Schilling Environmental Education Center in Decatur on Monday, March 17th. And then there's a smaller photo of Susan Rahill and Paula Lukenbill. Bag plastic bottle caps ready to be recycled with Paula's retired recyclers at the Schilling Environmental Education Center in Decatur on Monday, March 17th. And they're pouring buckets of bottle caps into these specifically made plastic bags. Illinois Agriculture. Leaders share concerns over cuts. Pritzker, use our voices to protest federal reductions. This is from Urbana. There is no shortage of concerns from those in agriculture when it comes to the impact of planned federal funding cuts to various sectors of the industry. We're extremely alarmed with the chaos that's happening at the federal level, Tracy Barkley, director of the Sola Gracia Farm, said. Right now, we have $90,000 in 2025 that's on the chopping block. Much of that's already spent. We don't know if we'll get reimbursed. We have $600,000 in pending grants for the years 2025 to 2027, and I'm not sure if we'll see that at all. And a lot of the grant funding is what makes our mission work possible. Barkley was among the farmers and nonprofit organizers who gathered Wednesday to share those concerns with Governor J.B. Pritzker and U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat of Springfield, at the Sola Gracia Farm in Urbana. Growing desperation and uncertainty about the future of their work were common themes. Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello warned that the cuts will gravely impact access to fresh local produce for the state's most vulnerable communities. The Illinois Local Food Purchase Assistance Cooperative Agreement Program, which gives federal money to disadvantaged farmers to provide local produce for food banks and underserved communities, will be cut. These foods are going to feed, honestly, the people that are the most insecure and the most vulnerable in our state. It's an incredible program, Costello said. The cut, $14.7 million right now, that we're being told is cut, is devastating. Costello said the program currently serves 833 food insecurity sites through 176 participating producers. Another organization represented at the roundtable, the Savannah Institute, focuses on agroforestry. Katie Adams, speaking on behalf of the Institute, said $1.5 million in expected funding meant to help farmers plant trees in their pastures, fields, and waterways is now on hold. We have a waiting list that's 50 farmers long in the state of Illinois, and we don't have enough staff to meet that demand, Adams said. Maggie Bruins, the executive director of the Prairie Rivers Network, said Illinois was supposed to receive $1.1 million in funding for agricultural producers to facilitate renewable energy systems, but has not received the money. Bruins said that the pause in the Rural Energy for America program, REAP, by the Trump administration has left some farmers with a debt they can't afford. Illinois farmers and rural businesses were promised these resources, Bruins said. They went ahead and started building the projects, and guess what? They are now on the hook for the full cost of these projects. Pritzker emphasized the need for a robust farm bill. The Farm Bill, a once-every-five-year omnibus bill, contains provisions crucial to farmers, such as the crop insurance program, through the vast majority of the funds spent in the bill, going toward Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, which provides food benefits to low-income families to supplement their grocery budget so that they can afford the nutritious food. It takes years to rebuild the things that you've got in place today, Pritzker said. And if we don't halt the damage as fast as possible, if they don't get a farm bill that actually still has SNAP and still has these conservation programs in there, these could go away, he said. The governor also stressed the importance of those frustrated with the cuts to federal funding to turn to protest and activism. Those of us who believe in these programs and believe they're important don't have a majority in Congress, and we don't control the executive branch in Washington, Pritzker said. It's true that we don't have the votes to change. What we do have is our voices in local communities and the stories that we can tell about the devastation that has occurred. Wednesday's roundtable titled Standing Up for Farmers was the first event of Pritzker's Stand Up for Illinois tour. The tour across Illinois intended to highlight what Pritzker calls Trump administration's extreme agenda. Pritzker's next event, Standing Up for Seniors, was set for Thursday in Romeoville, followed by two on Friday, today, Standing Up for Infrastructure in Rockford and Standing Up for Medicaid in Peoria. And the photo here on page A5 shows Governor J.B. Pritzker addressing a group of area agriculture leaders Wednesday in Urbana as U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat of Springfield, and Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello look on. And they're sitting at a table covered with tablecloths, gold tablecloths, and behind them is an international tractor, red tractor, and there's a sign behind them also saying Standing Up for Illinois Farmers. And also on the front page, Illinois government. Homeschooling Oversight Bill advances out of committee, Springfield. After nearly 3 hours of debate before a packed hearing room, a House committee on Wednesday voted to advance a bill that would impose new requirements on homeschooling, fueling a heated discussion over parental rights and government oversight in Illinois. The measure, known as the Homeschooling Act, would require families to notify their school districts when they decide to homeschool and that parents or guardians who teach these kids at home have a high school diploma or equivalent. One of the most contested pieces of the bill provides that if education officials suspect a child is not receiving proper instruction, they could demand proof of teaching materials and student work. The House Education Policy Committee voted 8-4 along party lines to move the bill to the House floor for a vote, with one Democrat lawmaker voting present. Representative Tara Costa Howard, Democrat of Glen Ellen, introduced the bill following the publication of a Capital News Illinois and ProPublica investigation which revealed little accountability for parents who pull their kids from school and then fail to ensure that they receive an education. Currently, Illinois has zero, I'm going to say it again, zero, regulations, said Costa Howard, the bill's sponsor. 38 states have regulations. Illinois is an outlier. This is not something we want to be an outlier on. The news organizations reporting documented cases where children endured severe abuse at home, unnoticed because they were not in school. One such case, referenced in Wednesday's hearing, was that of Zion Staples, a 9-year-old boy from Rock Island who went missing in December 2022. His mother, who had a long history of abuse and neglect allegations, was able to homeschool him despite previously losing two children to foster care. Police later determined Zion had accidentally shot himself while playing with a gun. His mother hid his body in a trash can for months before authorities found him. She pleaded guilty to felony, endangering the health of a child, and was sentenced to 2 years in prison in April. Opponents, including homeschool advocates and religious groups, called the bill an unnecessary government intrusion. Thousands of homeschool families filled the Capitol, packing the committee room and spilling into hallways in the Capitol Rotunda, where they sang hymns and patriotic songs. In addition to showing up in person, they submitted over 40,000 witness slips opposing the bill, a mechanism state lawmakers used to gather testimony and gauge support on bills. Nearly 1,000 people filed in support, including the Illinois State Board of Education, whose representative appeared to answer questions. Critics argued the bill would disproportionately burden low-income and minority families. This bill targets homeschool parents and treats us as criminals, guilty until proven innocent, said Aziza Butler, a former public school teacher who now homeschools her children in Chicago. Supporters pointed to cases of abuse, arguing that some parents use homeschooling as a shield for abuse and neglect. The Coalition for Responsible Home Education, a national child advocacy group, said some families pull their children from school to avoid scrutiny. We have tracked over 500 cases of extreme abuse and neglect in homeschool settings where the abuse escalated because of the isolation afforded through homeschooling, said Jonah Stewart, the group's research director. I believe this bill will help protect abused and neglected children and leave in place the freedom of parents to decide how best to meet the educational needs of their children, said Tanner Lovett, a homeschooling advocate, who also testified in favor of the measure. Opponents pushed back, arguing that there's no evidence homeschool children are at a greater risk of abuse than their public school peers. The proponents claim that children who are being homeschooled are at a greater risk of abuse and neglect. This is not supported by the two peer-reviewed studies that have been produced, said Will Estrada, senior counsel at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Some also warned the bill could lead to selective enforcement, particularly against marginalized families. We cannot clearly see how the bill would accomplish its stated goal of preventing abuse. It would certainly have many unhomeschooled students and investigate truancy. Opponents argued it could open the door to harassment. Estrada said that the bill would allow regional offices of education to request a homeschooling family's educational portfolio at any time, even as often as once a month. Costa Howard rejected that interpretation, saying such an investigation would only come if serious allegations arise. That is simply not true. That is not the bill. That is not what the law says. You are wrong, she said. Another point of contention was that the impact on private schools. The bill would require all private elementary and secondary schools to register with the state and submit student information upon request. The Catholic Conference of Illinois opposed the measure, saying it would force religious schools to hand over confidential data. Bob Gilligan, the organization's executive director, said that he understands the aim of the legislation is to ensure homeschooled children are safe and receive a sufficient education, but doesn't believe the measure would accomplish that. It's unclear how this bill would advance either of those goals, he said. Costa Howard defended the measure as a necessary safeguard. This bill about the thousands of children whose voices are not heard, she said, is a bill about that. I am the voice of the voiceless here today, and I will continue to fight for them, she said. And there is a photo here on page A5 in the Capitol building. A woman holds a sign, which was just one of many signs held by the thousands of people who gathered in the State House on Wednesday, March 19th, 2025, to oppose a bill relating to homeschoolers. And it's a large placard that says parents should be able to choose their children's education without government interference. Kill HB 2827. And there are several people in the hall, or wherever it's taking place in the State House, and there's a couple of gentlemen in suits facing the camera, and lots of people with other placards standing around. And on page A2 in Illinois, higher education, community colleges see spring enrollment spike. From Springfield, enrollment in Illinois community colleges grew to more than 285,000 in the spring semester this year, an 8.9% increase over a year ago, and the largest spring-to-spring enrollment increase since the Illinois Community College Board began collecting system-wide data in the late 1990s. In a report released Tuesday, the ICCB said 40 of the state's 45 community colleges report enrollment growth this spring. There was significant growth in several enrollment categories, including a nearly 20% increase in students enrolled in dual credit programs, which allow high school students to earn college credits. But there was an even greater increase, 23.4%, in students seeking general associate's degree programs. With the largest spring-to-spring enrollment increase in the third straight year of growth, our community colleges have not only bounced back from the pandemic, they are now stronger than ever thanks to our historic investments in education, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement. Since fiscal year 2019, the year Pritzker came into office, state funding for the Monetary Award Program, also known as MAP grants, the state's need-based financial aid program, has increased 77% to just over $710 million. During that time, Illinois has been able to increase both the number of grants it awards each year to more than 151,000 this year, as well as the maximum grant amount, which now stands at $8,604. For fiscal year 2026, which begins July 1st, Pritzker has proposed another $10 million increase in MAP grants, bringing the total to $721.6 million. Martin Torres, Pritzker's deputy governor for education policy, said in an interview that increased funding for financial aid has made higher education in Illinois more accessible to moderate-income students, especially those who choose to attend a community college. If you're at a community college combined with the federal Pell Grant and the MAP, the vast majority, nearly every single student who's at or below median income level can go for free in terms of tuition and fees, he said in an interview. Illinois community colleges also saw year-over-year enrollment increases in the fall semester. ICCB reported in October the total headcount enrollment had grown to 265,227, up 7.4% from the previous fall. That was also a higher growth rate than the state's public universities, which saw only a 2% increase in undergraduate enrollment over the same period, according to the Illinois Board of Higher Education. In his budget address to the General Assembly in February, Pritzker also proposed giving community colleges a larger role in the state's higher education system by allowing them to offer four-year bachelor's degrees in high-demand career fields in their local areas. He said that is intended to make four-year programs more accessible to people who don't live in or near cities with major universities. Torres said that he expects that legislation to come up soon in the General Assembly, possibly as early as this week. The community colleges who pursue this, if the General Assembly creates this authority, will have to go through the same accreditation process as four-year institutions, Torres said. And so from a quality standpoint, students will be able to expect the same level of quality, and the instructors will be required to be trained in the same way, he said. And there's a photo here of the of Lewis and Clark Community College. It's their outdoor sign. And the caption says, the spring 2025 enrollment report shows enrollment at community colleges in Illinois grew at a record pace compared to a year ago. In more local and state news on page A3, DeWitt County, historian to speak on Lincoln, sweetheart. This is from Clinton. The C.H. Moore Homestead and DeWitt County Museum is hosting a locally noted author and historian for an April presentation on Abraham Lincoln and Anne Rutledge. Rutledge was believed by many to have been Lincoln's first sweetheart during their time in New Salem, 20 miles northwest of Springfield. So Guy C. Fraker will lead a free presentation titled Abraham Lincoln and Anne Rutledge, Is the Story True? Fraker's presentation will be at 1:30 p.m. April 27th in the carriage barn of the museum at 219 East Woodlawn Street, Clinton. Fraker of Bloomington has written two books on Lincoln and the 8th Judicial Circuit, in which he served as an attorney. In addition to being a public speaker, Fraker chairs Looking for Lincoln, an arm of the Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area. For more information, call the museum at 217-935-6066. Again, that's 217-935-6066. And the talk is on April 27th at 1:30 p.m. in the carriage barn of the museum at 219 East Woodland Street in Clinton. In today's highlight in history, on March 21st, 1965, civil rights demonstrations led to the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Demonstrators led by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. began their third attempt to march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, this time under the escort of U.S. Army and National Guard troops assigned by President Lyndon B. Johnson. Also on this date, the 1952, the Moondog Coronation Ball, considered the first rock and roll concert, took place at the Cleveland Arena. In 1963, the United States closed Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary. More than 1,500 inmates had been jailed at the island prison off the coast of San Francisco, California, over its three decades of use. In 1980, President Jimmy Carter announced that the United States would boycott the Summer Olympic Games in Moscow because of the Soviet Union's failure to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan. And in 1990, Namibia became an independent nation as the former colony marked the end of 75 years of South African rule. In 2012, the punishment for a bounty system that targeted key opposing players for injury, the NFL suspended New Orleans Saints coach Sean Payton without pay for the coming season and indefinitely banned the team's former defensive coordinator, fined the Saints $500,000, and took away two draft picks. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, March 21st, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.